All right. Malachim Bet, Perek Gimel. What do you got? Questions? Comments?
Something I noticed, I don't know if it was in the last Perek, or maybe it was two Perek ago, that it keeps calls Yehoram, Yehoram ben Ahab, the king of Israel, and it calls
Yehoshaphat.
Yehoshaphat. It calls king of. It just calls him Yehoshaphat. Sometimes called Yehoshaphat, king of Yehuda, and the king of Edom. Why is it called Yehoshaphat, and the other two the kings?
Okay, we are going to talk about it in one place where he just said his name. We'll get to that soon.
I was just reading it, and I really just didn't realize, when did the king of Edom pop up?
Okay, we'll figure out how he's there. Okay, good.
Why is it randomly mentioned Mesher was a herdsman? Why did he give them 100 fatted sheep and 100,000 woolly rams? It says that Yehoram was, you know, he was bad, he wasn't that bad.
He was paying tribute, and now he stopped, and he's rebelling.
Okay. And also, Yehoram is not that good, but he wants to go talk to...
Okay, good.
Well, at least it says it's a good question, like, why are you coming to me?
Okay, good. All right, so let's see. So, in what way was Yehoram ben Ahab better than his father Ahab?
Well, he got rid of the pillar of Baal.
Okay, good. What does he still keep?
Sins of...
the Eglei Zahav, right? He still has the Eglei Zahav that was set up by Yehoram ben Nevat, which we already pointed out may not be Avodah Zarah, or may just be a non-sanctioned way of worshipping Hashem. It certainly wasn't allowed. But that he wasn't able to get rid of. But he does get rid of the other Avodah Zarah that his father and mother, I don't know if his mother, maybe he's not the daughter of Yizevel, but had introduced, and there's tons of it. So he's better in that way. Okay, that's good. What's the story with this Melech Edom? And when he says, oh, which way should we go? So first of all, we saw that he makes the same statement as he did before, you know, to his father. You know, Ami Amech, and what was that pasuk?
My people should be your people, my horse shall be like yours. It's the pasuk Zion.
Right, so this is the same pasuk that we had like a couple of prakam earlier. Ela kamoni kamocha, kami kamech, suke susecha. What is the reason why Yehoshaphat says, let's go fight Moab through the desert of Edom? So turn to Malachim Aleph, Perachav Bet, Pasuk Memchet. What does it say?
There was still no king in Edom, a commissioner from Judah ruled.
Okay, so basically, why is he saying we'll go through Edom?
Because it was their land.
Yeah, this sort of belongs to me. The guy who's running it, the quote-unquote Melech, is appointed by me. So therefore, we have another guy on our side. Okay. And they'll send their troops as well. What's the difference? Look at Pasuk Yud Aleph of our parak. Vayomer Yehoshaphat, ha'ein po navi la'Hashem v'nidrasha et Hashem me'oto? Isn't there some navi that we could ask? So first of all, an interesting thing, a side point. How is he introduced? He's introduced not as the Talmud Mufak of Eliyahu, the Bechor who got Pishnayim because he was able to see his Rebbe go up in a chariot of fire, but rather as
the one who poured water.
It's from here that the Gemara says that Godol Hashimush Shimusho Shel Torah Yotem Limuda. If you're Mishamish a Talmud Chacham, is one of the ways, you know, at the sixth parak of Perkei Avot, which is really a Braisa, says what are the 48 ways of wisdom? Alright, the Mem Chet, 48 ways, the Kinyan Torah, which from Noah Weinberg turns into a whole thing, 48 Ways to Wisdom, at the Mem Chet Kinyan Eitor, one of the Shimush Tamidei Chachamim. It's not the same thing to learn as it is to be Mishamish, to take care. Eliyahu and Elisha had a relationship, not just Rebbe Talmud, but Elisha was his Shamish. He took care of him. Why does that say something? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're Mishamish someone as opposed to learning by him.
When you're learning by someone, they kind of, I don't want to say build themselves up, but you only see them when they're at their best. You know, if you're being Mishamish someone, you're helping them wash their hands, you can see how they act, not when they're giving a shiur in front of everyone.
Okay, good. So you want to say that the person who is the Shamish knows the Rebbe better. I agree with that.
And you also see more details. I mean, when a Rebbe gets up to give a shiur, I mean, most of them, I mean, you have your notes, everyone has their notes, you know, they go through it, they're meticulous, they make sure it's a good shiur. You know, if you're Mishamish them, you see the rough edges, I don't know
what you want to call it. Yeah, I have a friend, Kenny Brander. He's now the head of Or Torah. He had been the vice president in YU. He was, when we were in YU, he was the Shamish for Soloveitchik. He was with him all the time. He took care of him all the time. He saw all sorts of things. You know, the Rav was giving him mussar. What, you know, go out on a date wearing sneakers? Or, you know, like he's like saying all these, like, he had real conversations with him. And it was cool things that you can learn. Like, he would say they kept away from the Rav and Rav Moshe Feinstein had passed away. Because Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Rav were cousins. They were friendly. And he kept it away. They kept it away from him. They don't want to tell him because they thought that it would upset him. And then the Rav says, how come no one told me that Rav Moshe died? He goes, well, how do you know? He says, like every yontif, they would take turns calling the other to wish a chag sameach. It was his turn to call. The only reason he wouldn't call, so, like, he must have died. Like, you know, that's the brisket way of figuring it out. He goes, oh, there you go. But this is what he said. So, like, there is something about Shemush, but I think it's more. I heard this beautiful idea. I don't remember who was quoting the name of, but it was Rev Reisman. There's all these shurim in Brooklyn. I was listening to a recording of his, and he quoted somebody. But there is a Gemara, pretty sure it's in Brachas, that says a certain rabbi was tired, he couldn't really learn, and he said, I'm going to sit by the Beis Medrash, maybe it's even a Kedushin, I'm going to sit by the Beis Medrash, and when the Talmid Chacham will come in and out, I'll get Schar for that. Okay, right? I can't concentrate now, so I'll get Schar for that. So the Rishon of the Acharonim asked, you didn't get schar for that. Like, don't we do mitzvahs not to get schar? Well, it's like the whole idea is, oh, he says a perkei avot, right? Mishamish is a rav shalom and not lekabel pras. So he's saying, oh, I'm going to go sit there so I can get schar. So Rav Reisman explained, I don't know if it was his idea or someone else's, what schar do you get for standing up for a Talmud Chacham? The schar you get is you develop Yirat Shamayim. When you start recognizing the Talmidei Chacham, the people that dedicate themselves to understanding God's Torah, you stand up for them, so it helps you develop more Yirat Shamayim. And I would say, that's what you're saying, like, you're Mishamish the Rav. You're taking care of him. That probably makes you even closer and feel like, I want to do even more for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I'm doing everything, I'm getting his shoes and I'm bringing him food and I'm doing all of this for the Rav, you probably feel even closer. And if so, and they're saying that Elisha wasn't just the Talmud of Eliyahu, but he was the Shamish. So I think that's maybe what's the Pshat in the Gemara. Shimush Talmidei Chachamim takes you to a totally different level. And this Elisha. Now,
I read like an excerpt of one of the Gedolim books, and it says that there was one of these Gedolim that it was. It's more than that your Talmud book. Like, it was your shir. He wouldn't leave his Rebbe's side because he was just trying to get as much as he could. Maybe trying to show that even more than a Talmud. He wouldn't leave his side.
Yeah. Look, there's a story in the Gemara in Kiddushin that says a father asked someone to get him a drink of water. And by the time the son came back, the father dozed off. And the son stood there with the cup I remember how long it took in the Gemara, for the longest time. So that whenever his father should open his eyes, he'll be right there. He just like put it down and say, all right. When he wakes up, there's the cup. But he just stood there holding the cup till his father wake up. Because I want to be at your beck and call. In fact, the truth is, when we stand up for a rav, I was once taught, what's the whole idea? We should like stand up at attention, ready to be sent on any mission. Right? Like maybe the rav walks in and goes, oh, I need a Rambam. Can you get me a Rambam? The little thing that we do, the little, like, we would have been half an inch off the chair, that's not called standing up. Right? Standing up is what we do from Nevinson. You know, we pop to our feet at attention. You know, like, you know, and we're like ready in case he said, oh, can you do it? Yeah. Got it. You know? So, I guess that's the idea, right? That I'm serving, I'm ready to serve. So, here it's interesting. Ahav had said, I don't want to go to speak to the Navi. Remember, he goes, oh, he only says bad things about me. But his son is okay with going to him. Right? The son even pleads with Elisha. And Elisha says, why are you coming to talk to me? Why don't you go talk to the Nevi'im of your parents, you know? So like, and he's like basically a little trash talking there. Yeah. Saying, oh, now you need me? Like, and Ahav's saying, don't be like that. Three kings and all their men, their lives are at peril. Like, you wouldn't though hear those words coming out of Ahav. Ahav was like, yeah, I told you he has bad things to say about me. Lock him up. Right? And Yoram's different. Right? His son is different. This is not Ahav. And better question is, what's Elisha doing there? Sort of weird. Like, they're traveling through Edom, and Yehoshaphat seems to make the most ridiculous request. Isn't there a Navi around here? And the answer would be, no, moron, we're in Edom, right? So like, what does it mean, isn't there a Navi around here? So Rav Menashe Wiener explains that he probably took with him those 400 Navim, just like the last time when his father had a question. They were like advisors, you know? You're going out to battle, and he took the people. And guess what? Probably the exact same thing happened before. He said, like, should we do something? Yehoshaphat says, I've seen this story before. They're all saying the exact same Nevuah again. And he says, isn't there anyone else around? Because otherwise it's strange. Look at the Pasuk. You know, Pasuk Yidav, Vayomer Yehoshaphat, Ein po Navi Lashem, V'nidushrat Hashem Miyoto, V'yanach Hanav Damel. Yeah, there happens to be Elisha also. Oh, okay, call him over. Because otherwise, it's sort of weird. Why was he expecting there's a Navi in the vicinity? Unless he grabbed all, they're like drafted into the army. And they're all there accompanying the foot soldiers. And we're just having like, you know, round two. And Elisha is now asked for his, you know, for his interpretation of what's going to happen. Now, Avram, you asked before, look at the difference between Pasuk Tet and Pasuk Yibet. Aaron, read it out loud.
Tet?
Yeah.
The king of Israel, the king of Yehuda, and the king of Edom then went and traveled and round about for 7 days. But there was no more water for camp.
Okay, skip to Yibet.
Yehoshaphat said, the word of Hashem is indeed with him. So they went down to him, the king of Israel, Yehoshaphat, and the king of Edom.
So what difference do we see?
Yehoshaphat versus king of Yehuda.
Right. I mean, all of a sudden here he's not even called the king of Yehuda. Why? So...
because his... standing before, is there no prophet?
Yeah, maybe we said before that his son was made king, no? Before he died?
Oh, but he's called the king of Yehuda a second ago. It is him, because in the beginning of the parak we say it's Yehoshaphat that was asked by Yehoram, will you come and fight with me? And he said, yes, I'm down.
Sounds like maybe Yehoshaphat didn't confide in any of the Nevi'im.
But why is he called now Yehoshaphat, not Melech Yehuda? So, some of the Farshim say Yehoshaphat had so much respect for the Navi that he took off his big name Malchus. He didn't go down with his crown. He went down as Yehoshaphat. Okay, the second president of Israel was Zalman Shazar, who happened to be a Chabadnik. I don't think he was still Shomer Shabbos, but he was a Chabadnik. And when he traveled to the United States on behalf of Israel, he went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And some Israelis were upset with him. You're the president of Israel. Why are you going to see him? He should come see you. And he said, when I'm before my Rebbe, it's just a chassid before the Rebbe. It's not the president of Israel. It's just a chassid before his Rebbe. And that seems like the way Yehoshaphat is. yes, I might be the Melech Yisrael, but right now I'm coming before the Navi. I have so much respect for you, but I'm going to come with my crown and my royal garb. I'm coming as Yehoshaphat. I need your help. And the other people, they're still, you know, they're Melech Edom and Melech Yisrael. But this is Yehoshaphat. Okay. And it's Radak that says this idea. He doesn't quote the Zalman Shazar and, you know, the Lubavitcher Rebbe story for some reason. But he says the other idea. Now,
someone here, the word that it has, I think it says it was stones in quotation marks.
Yes, they destroyed everything. Yeah, whatever was left was left, was no, even not left. They destroyed everything. That's what I'm trying to say. Now, why does he ask for music, Alicia? Why does he ask for music? There's a Gemara of Sachem that says when someone gets angry, if he's Talmud Chacham, he forgets his Chachma. If he's a Navi, he forgets his Nevuah. Right? Anger makes you forget everything. Right? The Gemara even says whoever like loses his temper, it's like an Ovid of Odazara, because you're not in control. Right? You're not in control. You're basically subservient. Your anger is dictating what you do. We know people do stupid things that they wouldn't do if they were thinking rationally. They throw expensive things across the room and smash it, right? And this is done in a fit of anger and not really in control. In order to get back Nevuah, so we have a number of places in Shmos. So let's read a couple of them. Look at Shmos 15, 20, and 21. This should be by Uz Yashir, I'm guessing.
Miriam the prophetess, sister of Aaron, took the drum in her hand, and all the women went forth after her with drums and with dances. Miriam spoke up to them, "Sing to Hashem, for he's exalted above the arrogant, having hurled horse with his rider into the sea."
Okay, so Shiru Hashem Kigo Ga'a. She says this after playing music. We had already Shmuel Aleph. Go to Shmuel Aleph, Perek Yud Pasuk Hey.
After that, you will arrive at the hill of God, where the Plishti commissioners are stationed. It shall be that when you arrive at the city, you will encounter a band of prophets ascending from the high place, and before them, players of lyre, drum, flute, and harp.
Oh, look at these. We have the VM, but who's with them? Music. And one last one, Divrei Yamim. Aleph, 25, 1 and 2.
David and the officers of the service corps set aside the sons of Asaph,
Heman, Yedutan. These names should be familiar to you from Tehillim. Sometimes we have them in Tehillim.
And who prophesied while using harps, lyres, and cymbals.
Okay. So music. Music helps put the Navi back in a tranquil state of mind, so he's able to receive Nevuah. He got upset when he first saw the, you know, cruel, wicked kings. He said, only because of Yehoshaphat I'm even going to listen to your request. Okay, I got to calm down. I got to get myself ready to receive Nevuah, which he does. Look at, sort of weird, Pasuk, in our Perek Yimel, go back to Perek Yimel, look at Tet Zayin and Yud Zayin. What's strange about Tet Zayin and Yud Zayin?
It says, thus said Hashem twice.
Good. Mm. Alright, sort of strange. Why do we need that? Alright, Ko Amar Hashem. Alright, Ko Amar Hashem. Asa Nachal Azeh Givim Givim. Ki Ko Amar Hashem. Lo Tiruach Lo Tiru Geshem. Anachli Melei Mayim. Okay, so what's going on? Two different miracles are going to happen. What are the two miracles? You'll be saved from thirst. There'll be water everywhere. And Nes Betoch Nes, as we saw in the Psukim, they will see the sun reflecting off the water, will think it's blood. We'll assume the three kings got into a civil war, killed everybody. Let's just go in and collect the spoils. They weren't expecting an attack. They came with the guard down, and Am Yisrael was able to attack. So that's why the Ko Amar Hashem, Ko Amar Hashem, we're dealing with two different things. Okay. Then we have one very strange pasuk. Pasuk Chav Zayin. What's going on in Pasuk Chav Zayin? Okay, I guess that we should start from Chav Vav. Start from Chav Vav.
When the king of Moab saw that the war was too difficult for him, he took 700 swordsmen with him to break through to attack the king of Edom, but they could not do so. He then took his firstborn son, who was to reign after him, and sacrificed him as a burnt offering upon the wall, and a great wrath took effect against Israel. So they turned away from Hashem.
Yeah. So who did what?
The king of Moab
did what?
Took 700 swordsmen and
sacrificed his son. Yeah, and then the next one. And did what?
He says he, so I'm assuming the king of Moab sacrificed his son.
Okay, good. There's two different ways. Chazal say he sacrificed his own son. Why would he do that? I don't know, to appease the gods, right? Look how much I need this. I'll give you my first son, and you help me win this war. Okay, possibly. The Radak says, Aaron, what you said. He took the son of Edom, of Melech Edom, and killed him. Now, according to the Radak's answer, I could readily understand why Edom gets very angry, right? And it says, right, got very angry. Why do you get very angry? I came into this war not to lose my son, right? Coming in here and all of a sudden my son's dead. And we can understand why the army disbands and they leave him. They return back to their land.
But it says they could not do so.
Who cannot do so?
It says that the king of Moab went to go attack the king of Edom, but they cannot do so. He went to break through to attack the king of Edom, but they cannot do so.
And then right, they weren't successful. So then, he kidnapped his son and he killed him.
Okay.
And that's what the Radak says. Now I can understand why Edom calls up the war and says, forget it, I'm just going home. It's ridiculous, I didn't get involved for this. Why am I going to talk to his mother about this, right? Okay. So, that is the Radak's answer. But, the first way, the way that Abraham, you said it, that sort of fits in with the words better. Right? You know, in Hebrew, "Be'yikachet bino habachor sheyim loch tachtav," sort of sounds like we're still referring to the king of Moab. Mm-hmm. The question then is, so why is God angry with, you know, like, why is God angry? If Edom was really an appointed ruler and it was Jewish people and he got killed, okay. But if the king of Moab killed his own son, why is God angry? So Rashi says, maybe the act reminded Hashem of the Avodah Zarah B'nai Yisrael and they lost his chuyot. Or it just caused him to recognize his pagan deities. And that was, you know, this war led him to, you know, maybe he wasn't from Ovid Avodah Zarah, now he became more devout. Okay? But either way, this pasuk is difficult, whichever way you look at it. And there are two different interpretations. Okay, now we have one of the really cool prakim. Okay, ready?